Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We kick things off with travel expert Carol Margolis talking about how to become a smart woman traveler. Up next is relationship coach Frank Kermit, who lets us know how media, from film to television to online content, can affect our relationships and how we perceive them. We then chat with up-and-coming Canadian husband and wife musical duo Drew and Danielle McTaggart of Dear Rouge. We wrap things up with fitness instructor Shay De Silva talking about her short but intense workout routine for people on the move called Fast Fitness To Go.
Capture your need for sound.
Have you ever been tired or stressed out while traveling for business? Carol Margolis is no stranger to travel, as she is the CEO of an international consulting firm. Carol joins us to talk about all things travel and how to make your next business trip a success. Carol, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Glad to be here.
So I think a big question for a lot of people that have to travel is, what are some of your tips for actually getting over jet lag? Because I think certain people are really bothered by it. Other people sort of can get through it. But I think, you know, overall, it is a problem.
You're right. You know, a lot of people suffer from jet lag, whether it's going from New York to L.A. or going over to Europe. And one trick that I always do that just makes a world of difference is act as if I'm already on their time zone. So when I land and get off that plane, I am in that time zone immediately. My watch is set, my mind is set, and I just seem to adapt to the time zone really easily that way. But I also get out, you know, and work out and, like, push my body. When my body wants to shut down and take a nap, I really don't let it until it's sleep time wherever I'm at.
Okay, so that's important to sort of push yourself to bedtime, really.
It's helped me all these years of traveling.
Okay. And when it comes to finding a good hotel, a good place to stay, what do you look for?
I look for something that feels safe to me, you know, that I look at reviews and there's, you know, it's comfortable to be at. It's not in an area that I wouldn't feel safe walking around. So I really trust a lot of online reviews in that regard. I also, as a solo traveling woman, look for hotels that offer full service, meaning there's a restaurant on site.
Yeah, I could see that being important. And how do you sort of figure out if the hotel is in a safe area? Because I know once I went to Detroit, and the hotel itself, you know, was fine, but I didn't realize that it was in an area that was not too far away from quote-unquote trouble, if you will.
Yes. And, in when you're in cities like that, what I would do is call the hotel and say, you know, I'm arriving at 11 o'clock at night. What's it like to get into your property? You know, will a security guard come out and meet me? And if they say instantly, yes, somebody will come out and meet you, it might not be the safest area.
Okay.
However, our travels sometimes take us to these downtown areas for conferences and that. So don't let it scare you away. But I always have the hotel number in my phone, and I call them as I'm arriving to say, I'm coming into your parking garage, I'm pulling up front, can someone escort me in? Do what feels safe to you, no matter where you are.
Okay. And let's talk actually about some of what you look for in the hotel itself, like amenities. What are some things that you really want to see, Carol?
I'm in a hotel right now that has one of the air conditioning units, the really noisy ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't have put that on the top of my list until now. It became a problem. It's too noisy.
Okay.
So I look for I don't know what the mechanical term is, but the units that are behind the walls.
Right. Yeah, gotcha.
And you just wouldn't think to ask for that. I like hotels that the entrance to my room is within a hallway, not one that you exit from the outside. To me, that feels safer. I can have room service, put my tray out in the hall. I like that. I look for a fitness center. Doesn't have to be fancy, but I'd at least like a treadmill there, something to get out and work out. And I like nice pillows and clean sheets, and I like fluffy towels.
Okay. And Carol, have you ever asked to change rooms? Like, has that ever been a problem before for you?
I've had many a reason to change hotels or hotel rooms And often I don't do it just because the hassle of having to pack up. But if I feel like I'm not safe, or maybe the smells in the room are really disgusting, I will leave the room or I will leave the property, yes.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is author of Business Travel Success, Carol Margolis. For more information, make sure to check out her website, smartwomentravelers.com. When you travel for business, what are some of the things that you can't leave home without and that you would suggest that people maybe bring as well to help them adjust or get through their stay better?
I bring a robe, and it's a very lightweight polyester long robe. But to me, that when I get undressed at night, I like to have my robe on. I feel like I'm at home. I also bring flameless candles, because then when I can turn the lights down, take a bath, it just feels more spa-like than a cold hotel room. So those are the couple things I always have with me.
And for women, you know, who are traveling and, you know, they've left their kids at home, and I'm sure there's probably a bit of guilt that they're not there to tuck in little ones at night. What do you suggest for them to sort of, you know, stay in touch with their kids? Like, is Skyping a good idea?
Yeah, that's a killer to the heart. You know, when you have to leave your kids and go off on a business trip, and I did it for many, many years. I wish Skype had existed when my kids were little. So definitely, you know, Skype or FaceTime. There's so many options now. Google Hangouts are great, where you can get multiple people. You can get grandma plus the kids on the phone. You know, have that face-to-face so that they see you. Mm-hmm. They can see where you're staying, and you can see them. It's just what a world of difference versus just making a phone call.
Is there times of the year, now I know if you're a businesswoman, obviously, you know, you're probably traveling most of the year, but in your history, Carol, is there times of the year that are sort of better to travel and times that you, if you could, would maybe avoid?
We're going into the holiday season, you know, the Christmas season. I don't like traveling when all the tourists are traveling. They've got all their gifts with them. They only travel once a year. They don't know the rules. So I prefer not to travel during the holidays, but unfortunately, you know, business takes us whenever. However, the number of conferences and meetings kind of slows down around the December timeframe, so that part's good. Busy summer times as well. Again, you're traveling with folks who only do it once or twice a year, so it's a different experience, you know, in the July and August.
And what about when you, because I'm just, all of a sudden an example came to my head. I remember when I was young, my parents, they don't travel often for business, but sometimes it happens. And when we were a kid, there was like this conference that they were going to at Walt Disney World in Florida. And what's your take on if you have to go to like a theme park area or something like that for work? Because like, you know, we were happy to go because my parents used it as an excuse to take us to Walt Disney. But it was sort of odd on some level, I think, to have this business conference happening at Walt Disney.
I know, you know, and I live near Disney World. I love it down there so much. I moved down there. So I've been to a lot of meetings there, and it tears you apart as a parent if you go without your kids, because you're like, wow, there's an event out at, you know, at Magic Kingdom tonight, and my kids aren't here. You know, I want them here. But on the other hand, you're there for business. But if you can bring your family, do so. Call the hotel ahead of time, see what they offer the kids. See if you can get an on-site babysitter if you need it. But, you know, the more you can involve your family, the less the guilt, you know, and it's a nice perk for the family once in a while versus having you gone all the time. So go for it.
How can you make travel stress-free, Carol? I know that that's probably a hard mandate, but I guess preparation is key.
It is, you know, and we only have control over so much. So for what we have under our control, like arriving on time, putting our name on all of our electronics and our bags so that, you know, we reduce the risk of them getting lost and with no name, they can't find us again. You know, definitely get to the airport early, get checked in, relax with a cup of coffee. Things that we can control ourselves will keep our stress down. And that way, when a flight delay is announced, you know, you've already come prepared with a really good book to read. You've got a cup of coffee. You don't mind sitting there for another 30 minutes or even 2 hours because you've prepared ahead of time. Big difference.
I know we've been talking about some of the things to avoid and so on, but I have to ask you, what is your favorite part about traveling? Obviously, you do it so much.
I know, you know, and I love to travel, and gosh, over 25 years of doing it almost every week. And what I love the most is the people that I meet around the world, whether it's someone I sit next to on the plane or someone at the hotel front desk, or local restaurants are my second favorite thing. I will not go to a chain restaurant anywhere.
Okay.
Except Starbucks. but I love local restaurants because you just get the flavor of that town or that city. You meet local people. So the people is number one.
And I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you've been traveling for over 20 years, and I know it's been a while since 9/11 has happened, but what is the biggest difference you find, you know, in post 9/11 travel?
I think the biggest difference is be adaptable to the rules that are forever changing, you know, because there were rules before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
We just had to pull out our old big clunky computers that I carried and turn it on and make sure there was nothing, you know, inside. That was a pain. So I'm actually finding it just different rules. So same, but different. And so it's being adaptable with the rules, keeping up with what TSA in the U.S. is doing and the security groups around the world. Just if you're not sure, call the airlines before you go. They'll tell you.
And before I let you go, I did want to ask you about the airlines. How best to choose an airline, Carol? Like, I'm sure, obviously, you probably have it down. You've probably been on several carriers.
Yes. And, you know, you look at who flies to where I need to go in the most efficient way, you know, maybe direct,
mm-hmm.
and at the best cost. And there's weighing that against, well, should I fly the same airline all the time so I can get status? And that all is answered by how much you fly. You know, if you fly multiple times a year, getting the minimum like 25,000 miles per an airline to reach some kind of status has some perks that you start to appreciate when you fly a lot. So I tend to stick with a couple of airlines for that reason, even though a particular flight may cost more than using a carrier I normally don't use. So it really all depends on the traveler's frequency of flying and the routes that they're going.
Okay, perfect. Carol, you've been great. Thank you so much for your time and advice. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Kelly, it's been fun. I can talk travel forever.
Awesome. That was Carol Margolis. Again, for more information on her book and for travel tips, check out her website, smartwomentravelers.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
There's nothing like cold weather to have you wishing you had someone to cuddle up with at this time of year. But finding love isn't always as easy as all those shows and romantic comedies portray it to be. Our relationship coach, Frank Kermit, joins us to talk about how we shouldn't be comparing our love lives to those on television or in the movies. Frank, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. Always great to be here.
So with all the, you know, the dating shows on television right now, what kind of message do you think that sends to people who are looking for a partner? Like, it's that it's easy?
Well, first of all, let's remember something. The entertainment industry is there for one thing, to turn a profit. Their primary goal is to entertain you and to turn a profit. And if they're not turning a profit, the show is going to get canceled and they're no longer going to be entertaining you. So always remember that when you're looking at television, movies, even commercials, you got to remember its job is not to educate you. Its job is just to entertain you. And sometimes they're going to make things seem a lot simpler than it really is. They're going to make it seem that, hey, everything is going to work out, so you should just try. Real life is not like this. You don't control how the other person in real life is going to react, the same way that a writer can control how a character is going to react.
Just like you mentioned, you know, many of these shows do make it seem so easy to fall in love. What kind of impact do you think that aspect alone has on people who watch? Because I'm sure there's a lot of, I don't know how you want to put it, like just shy people or socially awkward people or whatever, and they could be like, oh my God, look at them, I can do it too.
Yeah, it's very important to remember that even in some TV shows where they may show somebody who, let's say, is very shy, if the audience says, you know, that person really should end up with somebody, that person should not be alone, the fans can go ahead and write in to the TV show, the producers, and then decide, okay, let's write in a character to make sure this person doesn't end up alone. I think it was a TV show called Fame that did that. There was that one character near the end of the series that he was always this lonely character, and they found him a girlfriend near the end of that series. But the fact is, it doesn't work that way in real life. People don't just walk into your life. Now, some people are lucky. some people are lucky in the respect that people can come into their lives. However, it doesn't always work that way. For the majority of people, you have to go out and get it. You have to pull yourself out of your comfort zone. And for some people, they have to work at it. They have to talk to their friends and say, hey, is there somebody you can introduce me to? They may go to their families and say, you know, if you have any friends of the families that have single people that I could be introduced to, I'm interested. You may have to even go to places you've never gone to, try new meetup groups, start your own social circles. But it's not so easy for everybody. Just because you wait a long time and you happen to be a good person doesn't mean the perfect romantic partner is going to come into your life. It's not episodic. You know, a new character isn't just going to appear in, you know, next week's episode. You have to go out and be the new character in someone else's life.
Do you often, Frank, have clients who compare themselves or their situations to shows or, you know, programs, reality shows that they see on television?
Sometimes they come in and they say, well, believe it or not, they compare their lives to some sort of a fairy tale. They're waiting for a Prince Charming. They're waiting for everything to work out. They're trying to figure out, you know, where's my happily ever after? Why didn't this just work? And it's very important to understand that there is no such thing as a happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
Even after you manage to get the wedding and you fall in love and you buy the house and you have your first couple of kids, look, real life is not a happily ever after. It's something you have to manage day after day. So trying to say, well, it's kind of like that situation on TV. Well, that situation on TV had a predetermined ending that was going to help the show get more attention. And it may not be something that you can handle. What people see on TV and say, hey, that would be cool, they may not be able to handle in real life.
You know, I wanted to ask you this, if I can use the example of that movie with Jennifer Lopez and Matthew McConaughey of a few years ago, The Wedding Planner. Do you think that, you know, there's a lot of people out in the public who have a healthy regard for a romantic comedy like that, like go to see a movie like that because it's a feel-good movie and it's cute and it's like Prince Charming or whatever, but they know like that's not really how life is. But do you think like a movie like that can actually also be quite dangerous for someone who thinks like, oh, I could do this and I'm going to fall in love with the doctor and it's great?
Here's the theory. Entertainment for one can be education for another. If you're going to expose yourself to media, and this is something that I think that our society is probably going to have to step up on, I'm not going to say censor the media, change the media. I'm going to say let's educate people so they understand that the media that's being presented to them is a constructed reality. Are there people that when they watch the form of entertainment figure, yeah, I should be able to do that and it's okay. I can break the taboos and it's going to work out. Well, that's going to happen no matter what the influence is. People say that looking at their own families. Well, my family does this, and it's okay there. Well, if your family has a dysfunctional behavior pattern in acting, that doesn't mean that you're going to be in a long-term relationship with that same behavior pattern, and it's all going to work out. So, yes, can some people go see a romantic comedy, pull away a bad message from it? Absolutely, but that's not because of the romantic comedy itself. That's because people forget that what they see is not always the education of what they should do.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our relationship coach, Frank Kermit. For more relationship tips and advice, make sure to check out his website, friendstoloversformula.com. Frank, I wanted to ask you, we sort of touched upon it briefly, reality shows. Now, I cannot stand, you know, The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. Like, I don't think I've ever watched them, to be honest with you, other than like an episode here or there, or maybe like a clip, you know, so I could talk about it on the radio station that I work for. But I, like, overall, I think it's terrible. I think it's so fabricated, blah, blah. And I think the only couple that I know to have really made it is like from the first season, which I think was The Bachelorette, where Trista married Ryan, and they're actually still a couple, like 10 years later, which, you know, in itself, I think is actually great, because like, who knew? But like, when you watch this thing in general, or the premise of it, to me, it seems so over the top and ridiculous. But is there people that actually really get sucked into it, Frank? Because like, I just, you know, really can't believe that someone's going to fall in love with someone on a show in 12 weeks.
Well, I'll give you my perspective here. Number one, it's very simple for people to fall in love in 12 weeks. It's because people can fall in love in 12 hours. It all depends on what conversation topics they have, if there's some initial attraction there, And if they do like the person and they feel they can build a future, people can generate attraction after the fact.
Okay.
So that's okay. Well, that's very possible. When we talk about reality TV shows and people getting sucked in, you're right, because there's a lot of drama going on.
Mm-hmm.
Look, some people watch television like reality TV shows because it's fun. Other people will get really into these reality shows because it's a form of escapism. They're so miserable and unhappy with their own lives that they need some kind of an escape. And sometimes the drama of other people can be a wonderful escape. If nothing else, it makes you realize, wow, at least my life isn't as crazy as those people. And in some cases, they're thinking, wow, I really wish that my life had more drama and excitement and mystery and intrigue like these people.
When it comes to that situation, again, like another question I would have, and maybe this is me, but like, again, on a bachelor or bachelorette, like you said, there's a lot of drama going on. And I just find it like I understand what you've said about how you can fall in love with someone fairly quickly. But do you not think like I, and maybe this is just me again, but like when I see, you know, let's say it's The Bachelor or whatever, and he's got 12 women to sort of date, you know, X amount of times over, you know, a 2-day period so they can, you know, do the next show. How is it possible that he could be like kissing this one and that one and this one and that one? Like, I would even think the biggest player wouldn't act like that, especially because he's on his way to, you know, to try to find a wife. So how is it possible that he's doing this and that people are buying into it again, watching this on TV?
Well, first of all, I'm very curious as to why you think that just because a person dates multiple people, they're less likely to fall in love.
I just find it's funny. I'll use an example, and maybe this will or will not make sense. But for example, when I go to buy running shoes for running, I go to, you know, like a reputable running store where I know the manager and all that sort of stuff. And she explained it to me when I'm trying to find shoes, that she's like, I'm not going to bring out more than 3 pairs, because after that you will have foot confusion. She's like, you won't remember which one you've actually liked or fits best. And I feel like that should apply in this regard. Like, if you have 12 women or 12 men that you're trying to, you know, get along with or have feelings for, I would get confused.
As somebody who has dated a lot of people at the same time, the truth is you can get confused about what you may have done with each person. Did I go see the movie with you? No, you went with the other person. Oops.
Right.
So you can get confused about those things. What you will not be confused is how well someone treats you. What is never going to be confusing is how well someone addresses your particular emotional needs.
Okay.
And in my philosophy, just because the divorce rate is so high, and in my client base, I see the devastation caused for some people going through a divorce, and it's a horrible, horrible thing. I encourage people to date as many people as possible and to only get seriously exclusive when they meet somebody that they believe has the potential to be a serious long-term partner. But until you reach that point where you find out that you're compatible in enough ways that makes that person truly a potential serious long-term partner, you should be dating as many people as possible. Choosing the wrong long-term partner is one of the worst mistakes anybody can make. And you don't solve that mistake by limiting your choices. You solve that mistake by exposing yourself to all the different possibilities out there until you find someone that leaves no doubt in your mind, because you have the experience of managing relationships. You want to find someone that leaves no doubt in your mind that that's the person that, even if you're going to struggle with certain things, it's the person that you are more motivated to battle those struggles with and last long term. If you only date, for example, you gave the example of running shoes, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, let's say that you are an athlete and you're only given the option of, let's say, choose the best of these 3 pairs of shoes. Well, for the average person, you're going to be walking, you're not going to be doing too much activity. Maybe choosing the best of 3 might be good enough. But if you are an athlete, and there's a lot riding on the pair of shoes that you're going to choose, because a different pair of shoes might enhance your performance on a specific exercise, may enhance your performance when you are making a living being an athlete. You want to try every single shoe out there to find the right shoe for you and your specific needs.
Mm-hmm.
Because long term, being with the wrong shoe could affect your career the same way that long term, being with the wrong person, because you limited your options, could land you in a divorce.
Good point, Frank. Awesome. And I think the last question I have on this is, what would you say to, you know, people who watch these shows and, you know, they see that, like, the situation is hunky-dory or whatever, but what point do you not see in a movie or television show? Like, what point, you know, in a relationship is not portrayed that you really need to be able to handle? Maybe that's not, you know, the Princess Charming or, you know, Prince Charming thing to show on one of these movies that you need to remember in order to keep your relationship strong and going.
There's two things that if you want to adopt these two principles to dissect any and all media, they are truly going to make you realize just whether or not what you're seeing has any legitimacy. The first one is time. If what they're portraying reflects an accurate usage of time. And by that I mean, let's look at a really great example here, The Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
This is when Bill Cosby played Heathcliff Huxtable. He was a doctor, his wife was a lawyer. And let's look at the time that's put in for those two professions. The majority of people that I have counseled in those professions, they work 12-hour days. Sometimes doctors work a 24-hour shift. But yet on The Cosby Show, you saw that the parents were very actively involved in their kids' life. Well, how is that possible when anybody who's actually in that profession and making a very decent living at those professions isn't usually home for dinner time? So that's the first thing. And listen, I love The Cosby Show. I think it was a really great show because they really focused on genuine family-friendly humor. There was a lot of good, solid messages about the importance of family. But let's be realistic here. Someone who is a doctor married to someone who is a lawyer wouldn't be spending that much time at home with the kids. The professions just wouldn't allow it. So that's the first thing, and that's time. The second deciphering element is a rule I call, it's one of my rules of calibration called follow the money. You have to look at it and say, where are these people living? What would their expenses be in order to support that lifestyle? And is the money that they're supposedly making in these professions that they're displaying in the show, could they actually pay for that? I mean, that was one of the criticisms for the TV show Miami Vice.
Right.
Like, how could those two detectives afford such stylish and high-priced clothing on the salaries that they were portrayed as making? Now, yes, it's a form of entertainment, but that's where people have to be mindful of the fact that, okay, somebody who's living that lifestyle, working that job, making that salary, doesn't have the disposable income to be spending that kind of money on clothes. So if you take just those two things, the factoring of time, is it a realistic portrayal of the time people have to put in, as well as the asking the question of follow the money, where's that money coming from? Is the money that is being spent and exhibited reflecting how much somebody would actually make?
Okay.
Once you start doing those two things, you realize, wow, in the world of entertainment, reality just doesn't cut it.
Yep, I see that. That's awesome. Frank, thank you so much for this insight.
Kelly, it was great, and I look forward to being on your show again.
That was relationship coach Frank Kermit. Again, for more information, very simple, check out his website, friendstoloversformula.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very excited to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show Drew and Danielle McTaggart, better known as Dear Rouge, an awesome Vancouver-based husband and wife duo. Drew and Danielle, thank you for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I wanted to start off, there's many questions, but I think the first one I wanted to start off with is, how did you pick your name and what is the symbolism behind Dear Rouge?
Well, it came from my hometown, actually. I grew up in Alberta, in Red Deer, hence the Dear Rouge. But Drew and his brother were on holidays, and a band name is always really difficult to pick. It's just there's so many bands out there, and you want to have something unique and something that's not been used a lot. So they were trying to figure something out and basically kind of switched up the wording for where I'm from, and that's how we came up with the name. So
Very cool. I felt very special seeing as how I'm in Montreal and we have the word rouge, so it was very good. I like it.
Yeah, nice.
So my next question has to be, you know, how did you guys come together as musical partners? And then obviously you're a husband and wife team now, so did you meet as sort of musicians first?
Yeah, we met as musicians. Both of us were doing different music projects at the time. We always were friends and connected, and I just thought Danielle was so talented, and I heard her live one time, and she had the most amazing voice, and but she was always doing music that wasn't that, like, enthusiastic, and so I convinced her to come out to Vancouver to record just one song, to try one song with us. We did that, and that was the first song that we released as a band together, and we decided to form the band because people really liked the music.
That is very cool.
Moves on me. So.
Then Drew was all Wile E. Coyote on you.
Yeah, totally. I proved there that I could work hard, and then I used my tactics for romance.
I love it. This is awesome. I love that you have tactics. That's very good. So that's awesome. Smooth operator. So what's it like, though? Because, you know, I've worked in radio for a long time, and we've done topics before about, you know, can you work with your mate? Like, can you put IKEA furniture together? And you guys are actually doing it. So how is it to be, you know, you've got this personal situation going on that you're a husband and wife duo, but then you've got this musical thing going on. So do you have to separate, or does it sort of like all just come together anyways?
I think the big challenge for us is holding back sometimes, not being
super honest.
Too honest, like, because we live life together 100%. Like, it does sometimes get in the way of each other. It feels a little bit crowded sometimes.
Yeah.
But we take it day by day.
Yeah, I always tell people too, like, a lot of people think because we're married, we just like get a bottle of wine and candles and start writing together. And for us, it's more like Danielle has an idea. She's like, I'll email it to you. And we live together.
Yeah, but it is really good. Like, it's cool that we can have these memories together, and we're pursuing what we love. And not a lot of people can say that, and we're married. So it's really exciting.
And that's really interesting, because I wanted to ask you now as well about the fact that, you know, you are in a band, which is one thing, but you have each other as soulmates, if you will. And I was recently interviewing another artist who you probably know, I'm assuming, because she's out in your scene, I would think, Lydia Hall. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, Lydia.
Yeah, and we were talking about how it's a lonely life, sort of being a singer-songwriter and having to basically be this entrepreneur and getting it all done sort of on your own. So having the two of you together, is that, like, just so comforting to know that it's not all on each of your own shoulders to make this work?
For sure. Yeah, it totally does. It gives you encouragement, and you work together as a team, right? I think we're more and more figuring out how we can work better together, but it's a huge strength where we just know that the other person's there.
And Drew and I are actually very opposite personalities in a lot of ways. So, yeah, we definitely have each other's strengths to sort of carry us when the other person's not feeling so strong in a certain area. So that's really good strength as a team to have that together.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Drew and Danielle McTaggart, better known as Dear Rouge. You can learn more about them on their website, dearrouge.com. Can you guys explain your sound for us? Like, it's so easy to have other people explain how you sound, but do you guys have it in your head, like, we are this?
It's like all electro, dance, positive music. We encourage people to move when they hear our music.
Yeah. We recently actually have added a David Bowie song, Let's Dance, to our set.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel like it's, obviously, that's a very old school 80s sound, but it kind of works with our music. It's happy, it's fun, but it's pretty cool sounding too. So we try to be like very respectable pop is what we say when people ask us that.
How do you feel about the Canadian music scene? Because lately, like, I've really had the great fortune to sort of be interviewing up-and-coming artists or bands like a Lydia Hall, like a Hey Ocean, Head of the Herd, all these great people. How do you feel, like, where you fit in, you know, in this group? And are you all supportive of each other?
Yeah, the Canadian music scene is amazing for support. Bands are really positive, and they help out. And I think they ultimately, any band that's in Canada touring all the time and trying to make a go at it, they respect you because they know how hard it is to travel across this country, how the population is and how it all works. So they have this respect and we kind of encourage each other, you know? And so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking today, Canada is a very vast country. It's beautiful, but it is hard to make a go of music, and even just like Drew said, the amount of people that live in the country. So I think, yeah, bands support each other, just knowing that it's not that easy. It's sort of a gamble to want to do this for your life. So,
how do you feel about the crowds that are out there? Because I know, I do this for a living, and the fact that, you know, I'm on a radio station and, you know, we're playing all these groups and stuff. And I know at the end of the day, I'm sort of tired. So I don't really head out all the time as much as I probably should to like the different bars and clubs to hear new music. I want to, but I just sort of run out of road track. So I sort of have to pick and choose.
Yeah.
But how does it feel for you guys? Like, do you still feel like it's pretty healthy right now when you're out there, that you have new people coming to whatever club you're at or bar, and you're sort of seeing that there is like a definite live music scene happening?
One day, like, we'll have a show and there'll be like 10 people there, and the next show we have, there'll be like 100 people there. So it's really, really hard to tell. And also, honestly, it is like the market as well. Like, we did a show last night. It wasn't that full, but it was really good. It was in Thunder Bay, and so, like, I don't know, it's up and down. Couldn't say for sure if people are still really into going to see live bands or not.
And how does it feel, like, we've been talking about you crossing the country, I'm not sure if this is your first time or not sort of doing that, but what is the best part about it, and what is the most challenging part about making this trek as you head east?
Well, the best part about it is it's beautiful. Like, the country is beautiful, and each city's really unique. The hardest part is that you're driving 8 to 10 hours between major cities. And that kind of wears on you, where you'll go and you'll do press in the city, stop by a radio station, play a show, get home at 1 o'clock, and then wake up at 6 to head out the next day. And after you do that a whole bunch of times, that's pretty difficult.
Wow, that is crazy.
It's enjoyable, though. It is enjoyable.
That's awesome. Now, what do you want fans to take away, and new fans that are listening? You know, we have people listening right now overseas to this interview. So I know a new album's coming out in 2014. Your single right now is I Heard I Had. What do you want people to take away from the new single and from the upcoming album?
Yeah, we want people to take away that this is our first full-length album, and we're really proud of it. We did 2 EPs. We're working on our sound, but we feel really confident in the songs that we're releasing. And I Heard I Had was the first single, and we really like that song. It's one of our more rocky songs on the album, and there'll be a lot more synth-based songs as well on the album.
I wanted to ask you as well, is there like an artist or a producer out there that you would love, 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 love to collaborate with?
Yeah, I would personally love to collaborate with Anthony from M83.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of respect for the music that he creates and the projects that he's involved with. I would dream of collaborating with musician producers, musicians that I respect. There's a lot of great producers out there, but those are kind of the funnest ones to work with because they have a lot more vision for your songs.
And what can we expect from you guys in the next 8 to 12 months? Like, obviously the new album's coming. What do you ultimately want to have happen with your career as Dear Rouge?
We would love to get this record out there as much as possible. Go on tour with some bands that we respect, some bands that have a really great following, so that we can get new fans and keep working really hard, and in the future continue to write and continue to record and make music videos and just get out there and do the best that we can to make great music and create new fans.
That's fantastic. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show, and, you know, come on the show anytime. Best of luck.
Thank you, Kelly.
That is Drew and Danielle McTaggart of Dear Rouge. Make sure to learn all about them on their website, all the social media, all the good stuff, DearRouge.com.
I heard a little sound of noise while I was walking out my door. I had a little bit of doubt that this would really be worth it all.
How many times have you talked yourself out of not going to the gym because of not having enough time or being too tired? Well, today we're going to be talking to fitness instructor Shay De Silva, who has developed short but intense fitness programs to fit anyone's schedule. Shay, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Great to be here.
So why do you think it's so hard for so many people to find time during their day to work out? It always seems like they can't.
Right. Well, people just have busy schedules and they're getting busier every day between family obligations, work obligations, and just wanting to relax after a long and stressful day. Oftentimes the last thing people want to do involves exercise or getting off the couch.
And how did you actually come to designing this Fast Fitness on the Go program? Like, was it, obviously it took a lot of time, I'm sure, to create it.
Yes. Well, I had been working as a consultant for many years and fell into that trap myself. I was busy traveling all the time and I couldn't find time to fit in my workouts. So I was getting tired and cranky and gaining weight and was miserable. So I went on a hunt for a program that I could do anytime, anywhere, and I couldn't find anything that really seemed to work for me. So I got certified as a personal trainer and started creating a program really just for myself. And then as I was sharing it with friends and family and coworkers, they were loving the workouts, and I thought, oh, maybe I should turn this into a business, and it just sort of grew from there.
And what are the core principles of, Fast Fitness to Go?
The core principles are no weights, no equipment, you don't need anything. So the goal is to get rid of all excuses for not working out. So if you don't have your sneakers, you can still do the workout. If you don't have an exercise band, you can still do the workout. They generally take 20 to 25 minutes, and they're meant to replace an hour-long workout. So they're very fast-paced. They go quickly from upper body strength to lower body strength to ab work to cardio, without any breaks in between. So what a lot of people worry about is they think, oh, I need to go and spend an hour or two working out. And if you actually follow them around the gym or wherever they're working out, so much of that time is playing on their phone or taking breaks in between exercises. And so what I've done is I've condensed all of that. So it's getting in that longer workout, but taking out the breaks, moving quickly so your heart rate stays up the entire time, even while you're doing strength moves. So it really blends the strength and the cardio without all that added in stuff with the weights and the equipment and the break times.
And what do you say to people who are constantly traveling? Like, how do you get them to buy into this? Because I know, you know, I'm sure there'd be all kinds of excuses like, oh my God, you know, I can't do it in my hotel room, like whatever.
Well, you can't. Well, that's the other thing that I didn't mention. So they're meant to be done in small spaces.
Okay.
I actually have some clients who do them in dorm rooms. So I have yet to see a hotel room that's smaller than a dorm room. So if it can be done in a dorm room, it can be done in a hotel room.
Right.
But scheduling is still an issue. I know when I was traveling, my days would often start at 7 in the morning and they wouldn't end until 9 or 10 at night. And what I encourage people to do is to just try to do something in the morning before the day starts. I know it's a little bit earlier, but it just makes those long days so much easier. And even if you don't do a full workout, even if you just get out of bed and do 25 jumping jacks, just something to get your body moving is so much better than nothing at all.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is fitness instructor Shay De Silva from Fast Fitness On The Go. For more information, check out fastfitnesstogo.com. So, you know, we talked about you not needing lots of accoutrements to get this stuff done. Is it body weight that you're using, I guess, as resistance and stuff like that?
Yes, all body weight. So you don't need a chair. You don't need a wall. You can be in the middle of an empty floor with just your body. And most people weigh at least 100 pounds, which is more than enough resistance to give you a strength workout.
Okay. And can you give us like an idea, like let's just say you are on a business trip and you know, wake up Wednesday morning, what do you want them to do?
Yes. So let's say you're trying to create your own workout. You woke up, you didn't plan anything, you don't have your computer. I recommend people start with doing 30 seconds of cardio. So that could be 30 seconds of jumping jacks, 30 seconds of an upper body exercise. So let's say that's usually about 10 to 15 push-ups for most people.
Mm-hmm.
30 seconds of a lower body exercise. So squats or lunges are easy. And then 30 seconds of ab work. So crunches, bicycle crunches, and then repeat that two or three times. And ideally you'll do, when I set up create my workouts, I'll do three sets of those four exercises and then do four exercises that follow the same pattern. So come up with another cardio exercise, maybe jogging in place, another upper body exercise, maybe tricep dips on the ground so you can point your fingers towards your feet and then lift your butt up and bend your elbows. That works your triceps.
Mm-hmm.
Another lower body exercise. You could do leg lifts and then another ab exercise. You can do lifting and lowering your legs while you're lying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, repeat that. So start with the basics. If you're doing nothing, just do cardio, upper body, lower body, abs one time and just get yourself in the habit of doing that, and then you can build from there. So when one gets too easy, then you can start adding a second set.
Okay, perfect. And what is your suggestion with regards to those breaks? Because I know I totally get what you're talking about when people waste time at the gym. It's always appalling to me when I'm at the gym and I see how much time is wasted, because I am not a time waster. So when I'm on my machine or whatever I'm doing and I see, like, there's this one lady that I see and she reads a book while she's on the bike, which, you know, fine. But it's like, I guess when the pages get interesting, her cycling slows down. So I'm always like, it's the funniest thing to me on the planet. And then you always have the, it's like a grazing herd. Like they walk around the gym, go to the water fountain. Like, it's so much time is wasted. So how do you get people out of that mindset? Like, to just go, 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 get it done.
Well, I like to tell them, not if they're not worried about time, which I'm the same way. I hate wasting time. But some people, they have all the time in the world. So if that's the case, the biggest reason for not wasting that time and putzing around and reading your book is you'll burn more calories. So if you do your hour-long workout and you spend, let's say, 30% of it walking around or reading your book, which you're absolutely right, it definitely slows you down. If you can read, you're not pushing hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and you condense it. So let's say that hour workout, you're burning 300 calories with all your breaks. And now all of a sudden you do that same workout, but you get it done in 20 or 30 minutes, you might burn 400 or 500 calories because your heart rate stays up. So every time you let your heart rate go down mm-hmm. and give yourself a break, you're not doing your body any favors. So even if you have the time to take those breaks, you'll get a much better workout by condensing it.
Are you suggesting as well that people should sort of put in their head to work smart, not hard necessarily? Like, obviously you are working hard, but mm-hmm. but to think before, you know, to think about what you're doing and to not like not wasted movements.
Yes. So at the very least, plan your workout in advance, even if you just write on the back of your hand, this is what you're going to do, instead of walking around looking at what all of your options are or thinking, what should I do today? Because that's also giving you time to talk yourself out of working out.
Right. Okay. You know, again, for people that are traveling, and I guess even people at home, what main tip do you want to get in their head? Like, is it to just get up and do something? Like, because I totally get what you were talking about, too. Like, when you get up, if you start something else, I think it's hard for you to say, oh, I'm going to make time for this.
Yes. So get up and do something. It depends on where you are in terms of fitness. If you normally don't do anything, the one thing I like to tell people to do is write down 10 exercises and put them on a piece of paper in front of your TV and get up on a commercial break and do one. And if you're already working out regularly and you just find that some days you don't have time to do a workout, you're too tired, have a routine that you know you can do in a short amount of time. So again, you can write that on a little index card and stick it in your wallet. And on days when you say, oh, I just don't have time to work out today, just have that be your fallback plan. Okay, this is what I'll do on days when I can't squeeze in a full workout. And maybe it's only 5 or 10 minutes, but it's something.
And by doing that, does it help you maintain your level? Because, like, let's say you are an avid exercise person and you do whatever, biking, running, whatever it is, swimming. Let's say you are at a conference for a couple of days or something and everything's a bit wonky and, you know, you're having to work on other people's schedules and stuff. By just doing your workout, does that help you maintain what you need to do when you get home, sort of thing?
Yes. So it maintains your fitness level in terms of all the hard work you've been putting in. And it's also really good for just creating that habit. So I like to tell people to do something every day. So obviously you don't want to do a really tough, strenuous workout 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. But do something. There should never be a day where you don't at least go for a walk or at least do 25 jumping jacks or something physical for your body. It just creates that habit that this is something you do every day.
What do you say to people who are maybe a bit older? Is this something that they can handle as well?
Yes, with modifications. So what's strenuous for a 20-year-old is very different than what's strenuous for a 60- or 70-year-old. So they can do the same principle, but the exercises would have to be easier. So instead of doing jumping jacks, maybe they walk around their house for 30 seconds. Instead of doing push-ups, maybe they do their push-ups on their knees or against a wall. So just modifications based on your ability, and that goes not even just for age. There are some people who are 20 who can't do jumping jacks and push-ups. So I think it's important to adjust whatever you're doing to your fitness level.
And because these workouts are, you know, intense and quick and all that sort of stuff, what is your suggestion with regards to water intake? Obviously, it's important to stay hydrated throughout this, I would imagine.
Yes, definitely. Keep a water bottle with you all the time. When you get thirsty, take a sip of it. You definitely don't want to chug water. I've seen some people where they'll drink their entire bottle of water in one sip and your stomach's going to hurt. You're going to have all this water sloshing around. So take sips when you get thirsty. If you're doing a 20 to 30 minute workout, you should probably need to stop for water 2 or 3 times and just take a little sip so you're hydrated. And then as soon as you finish your workout, drink, you know, finish your bottle and rehydrate yourself, because you'll definitely sweat a lot.
Awesome. And what final tip would you like to leave us with regards to this mindset?
I think it's important to go easy on yourself, to do the best you can. So every day, remind yourself of your goals, why you're doing this. And if you slip up, just remind yourself again tomorrow. So it's important to create that habit. And as long as you're moving forward, it's better than moving nowhere at all or moving backward.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much, Shay. We really appreciate this.
Thank you, Kelly.
That was fitness instructor Shay De Silva. For more information, make sure to check out her website, fastfitnesstogo.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
A big thank you going out to Carol Margolis, Frank Kermit, Dear Rouge, as well as Shay De Silva. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Lori Hulse Anderson. When people don't express themselves, they die one piece at a time. Thank you, as always, for hanging out on the show. We always appreciate it. If you have any comments or questions, drop me a line, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. And don't forget to check out all our social media, from Twitter, @KAlexandershow, to our Facebook page, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course on YouTube, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.